It was a Saturday night, and he called me that night. And I was very happy because he can call me all the time when he's in Afghanistan. So when I got that call, I was ready to speak to him. But when I told him, hey, Carlos, how are you? He was like, I'm fine. But he was different, a little bit different. So I start asking him, like, are you sure you're all right? Everything is good? And he says, this is different, different than Iraq. And he starts telling me, like, you know that you're the most important thing for me, and you are my daughters, and are everything for me. You know that I love you so much. And then the phone went dead. So I start crying because I thought that something happened, that he was in danger. I thought, I don't know, I started thinking bad stuff about over there. That was a Saturday. Sunday passed, and then on Monday, I received a call from the Marines, and they told me that they need to see me because they have to tell me something that happened to Carlos. Notify me.
From the Family Life Podcast Network, this is Unfavorable Odds. I'm Kim Anthony. Unfavorable Odds is all about finding hope and help in those seasons of life when things get pretty difficult. You know, Jesus has promised us that whenever we walk through those dark, tough times, he's always going to be with us. So on each episode of this podcast, we'll be talking with people who have learned how, in those very difficult times, to draw their strength from Jesus. Carlos Evans was on his fourth deployment, proudly serving our country as a Marine. But one day, while leading his team on foot patrol, he stepped on an IED, an explosive, that resulted in a number of significant and life-altering injuries. As he began to recover from his injuries, he and his wife, Rosemary, found themselves facing difficulties that at first seemed impossible to overcome. Carlos and Rosemary have written a book called Standing Together, the inspirational story of a wounded warrior and enduring love. I spent time with both of them recently. I found them to be a couple full of faith who have been able to turn tragedy into triumph. So, Carlos, when you were making that call, what was going on in your mind? What had happened to even cause you to tell her those things?
Well, we were in combat in Afghanistan, Helmand Province, and there were a lot of things going on at that time. And my main priority in my life was my family and my motivation. So, before that call, we were in a mission, and we went through a improvised explosive device with our vehicles. So my vehicle exploded, and everybody was safe, but it was kind of a reality check in my life. Like, you know, this is very dangerous. I just started, you know, thinking about my family, and I knew it was a different scenario than I was before. So that day I had the opportunity to call my wife, and I wanted to make sure, I wanted to let her know that, you know, if something happened, that she knew that I loved her, that I love my daughters, and you know, they were my motivation to keep moving forward.
When you look back at it now, do you sense that God gave you that opportunity almost like a warning?
Yes, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Yes, he was preparing us, you know, yes.
Yeah. That's amazing. As I look at your story, I see that pattern throughout, that he was preparing you for those things that would come next. Now, as you waited after you got that call, Rosemary, you were concerned. You didn't know what had happened, but you were surrounded by a lot of family and friends. That's one of the things I noticed, is that from day one, both of you had great support
Mm-hmm.
How helpful was that for you?
Oh, it was great because when I got the news about Carlos, when they come to the house and told
the
us, the Marines came to the house and told us what happened instantly. We were in Carlos' house, in Carlos' mom's mother's house, and every friend came over there and they start praying, starting by the chaplain, because one of the Marines was a chaplain.
Okay.
And I remember that when one of the officers was giving us the bad news, then the chaplain started praying for us, giving us like, he was started praying for me and telling me that you're going to have peace in this moment. You know, you're going to have the strength. And that really gave me a lot of strength. And then all the family members and church community, they came to the house and start like doing prayers and start. It was like, you know, it was a hard moment, but at the same time, you were feeling that God, you know, God doesn't forget about us. He
yes.
sent the right people in the right moment. And yeah, it was great.
So Carlos, Rosemary was there with the family, not knowing exactly what happened, but they knew that something serious was going on. Will you take me through the circumstances leading up to the explosion?
I was on a mission in Helmand Province. I was leading that mission. I was a sergeant in the Marine Corps, and I was in my fourth combat deployment. It was May 17, 2010, and we were getting ready to go on this mission. And when we ended the mission, I was getting ready to go back, and I remember hearing an explosion. And the explosion that I heard was that I stepped on an IED. An improvised explosive device. Immediately, I lost both my legs above my knees. Part of my left arm and my left hand was amputated as well. And there were other Marines that were injured. What I remember the most was that I felt so much pain that I never felt in my life before. But at the beginning, I didn't know I was injured because my body was in shock. I thought something happened to someone else. But when I saw my Marines, my medic, my corpsman surrounding me, that's when I knew, oh, something happened. I kind of started seeing my life like a movie and seeing the things that I've done and the things that I haven't done. And when I saw my Marines surrounding me, that's when I knew, you know, I'm dying. Because what they were doing were things that we trained for situations like this that I was facing. So at that moment, I started to pray. And I started to question God too. I mean, how is it possible that I am a Christian, I'm a believer, and I'm going through this difficult time in my life? How is it possible that I'm gonna die here in this desert? Because before I used to tell my Marines, I'm not gonna die here because God's purpose in my life is bigger than this desert and than our enemy. But here I am facing all this, and my Marines saved my life. 19-year-old kids, 20-year-old. They put 9 tourniquets in my body. When I wanted to give up because of the pain that I was feeling, one of my Marines he shook my head and he looked straight into my eyes. And I believe that he was prophesying to my life because he kept telling me, "You're not gonna die here today." He kept asking me, "What is your wife's name?" And I kept telling him, "Rosemary, what are your daughter's name?" And I wrote in Genesis. And he kept repeating, "You're going to go home to them." I mean, in the middle of the crisis, everything that he said, he was speaking life into my heart. And 7 days passed by. I was in an induced coma from Afghanistan to Germany. And I opened my eyes in Walter Reed Bethesda. And Rosemary was right there in front of me.
As you were lying there in the combat zone, believing that you were about to die, you write in your book that you also remembered something your great-grandmother used to say to you. What was that?
My great-grandmother, I get very emotional. My great-grandmother used to tell me when I was a kid that God had a purpose in my life. And that I was going to preach the gospel all over the world. And in the middle of all that, you know, I was thinking, you know, how am I going to be able to see that if I'm dying here today? You know, so I kind of started questioning, you know, God's purpose in my life.
Yeah. Tell me what you're feeling right now. I see a lot of emotion.
I feel my emotions. I'm trying to describe them, but I feel good. I feel happy because sometimes you go through struggles in life, and you go through situations, and you ask yourself, you know, the why and the where. You know, where are you, God, and why? And God's word is bigger than anything, than any obstacle, than anything that you're facing. And that's just what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that, you know, God is in control of my life. And my dog is next to me right now because he knows that he knows what I'm feeling. So
I can see. Yeah. Those who can't see you right now, Carlos and Rosemary are sitting in a chair. And as Carlos began to express emotion, his dog came up to comfort him.
Yeah.
So beautiful. So beautiful. Rosemary, before you were able to see Carlos, you had a chance to speak to someone about his injuries. And because you have a background as a nurse, you wanted to know everything. You didn't want them to hold back. What did they tell you?
When I called Germany, I had the opportunity to talk with the nurse, and I asked her, you know, how he's doing, and he was connected to a ventilator, so I knew that he's going to be connected to a ventilator, but then she told me that they have to amputate his left arm, and I didn't know that, left hand, and that was something that really broke my heart, you know, it's like feeling that the person you love is going through so much. So I get desperate, but at the same time, I was hopeful, you know, that, okay, he's going to make it. He's going to come back home. And that's the important thing. I always pray to God that, you know, bring him back alive. I don't care, you know, right now in this moment, he lost his legs, but I need him back. You know, I need to tell him I love you. Because when they told me, you know, that he was so injured, one of the first things that I really start like regretting is, you know, the times that sometimes you are with your family member and the person you love and you don't enjoy that moment. You know, you don't take the time to tell them, you know, I love you because you're so busy doing so much stuff in the house or and when I see that maybe I'm gonna lose my husband, then I start like, God, you know, give me the chance to tell him that I love him. I don't want to lose him. I just want him back. So he came back, yes.
Yes, yes, he came back. He came back. And I go back to that preparation that God had you go through beforehand. Rosemary, you had taken a course in nursing school that would prepare you to care for Carlos.
Yes, it's amazing. When you look back, you can say that, wow, God, you really were preparing us to everything, every detail, every small detail, you really were there. So one of the courses that I was taking is a pre-hospital trauma life support. So it's accidents that happen outside the hospital setting. And one of the team that we have is amputations that happen because of blasts. So we were learning about that. We were, you know, when they told me about Carlos' accident, I could look for my book and start, you know, checking everything that was going on and what is going to happen and how everything looks like. So every detail, you know, God really prepared us for that.
Another thing he did, Carlos, is before this all happened, you took a picture of your left hand. Tell me, why'd you do that? What was it about? What were you thinking?
I was taking a shower, and I after I left, I'm out, I'm in my room, and I had my copy machine in my room. And I look at my hand where I usually wear my wedding ring, And I'm thinking about, you know, what can I give Rosemary, you know, just to remind her, you know, that when I'm not here, she could look at and remind, you know, of how much I love her and that wedding date and elbows and, you know, all that. And I took a picture of my left hand, took a picture with the copy machine, mm-hmm. and I gave it to her. And I said, baby, this is for you. Mm. And she was asking me, you know, why? I'm like, this is so when I'm far away, you look at my hand so you can know that I'm never, you know, I'm never far away from you. And every time I used to write a letter,
he drew the hand.
I drew my hand. So that was, you know, that was our thing. And she still has it.
Yes, I have it.
Oh, that's incredible. Mm-hmm. Incredible how God went before you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was at the hospital, I remember you had to go home.
And one of the letters came from Afghanistan. One of the letters that he wrote me from Afghanistan,
uh-huh.
I received it in my house when he was injured. And when I opened the letter, he was like telling me, you know, how much I love you. And he drew the hand and he drew my family inside the hand, everything.
Oh, as I was reading your story and I see the two of you now, I wish everyone else could see you. Just the love, the genuine love that you have for each other is such a testimony, not only to your story, but to the picture that you're able to show others of God. It really is incredible. What was it like when you first saw each other after the accident?
When I entered the room, I was outside because they were doing some of the CT scan of her brain because they don't know if he has a brain injury.
Brain injury.
And I was very afraid because I was worried that he has
deal with that.
Yeah, a brain injury, that he couldn't recognize me or something. So I was a little bit scared to go inside. But when I went inside the room and he was connected to the ventilator and everything, when I called him, I just, Carlos, he opened the eyes and then he started crying. And for me, that was like, okay, he recognized me. He knows who am I. He knows who we are because my in-laws came inside the room too. And he started looking at us. He started crying. But at the same time, it was like, I'm here, baby. You know, we're gonna go together to this.
I don't remember.
No, because he was.
I remember that experience that she had, but as she's saying it, those for her was tears of hope.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, when I saw her, the first thing that I thought about was my buddy, the Marines, and he was telling me, "You're not gonna die here today. You're gonna see your wife, Rosemary, and your daughter's Nairobi and Genesis." So when I saw her, it was like, wow, I'm alive. And I asked her, what am I doing? What happened to me? Because
mm-hmm.
I didn't know what happened to me.
Okay.
And she told me, I stepped on an IED. I lost both my legs, my left hand.
Yeah.
You're here in the hospital in Washington, D.C. And I'm thinking about all this. And I was happy to be alive,
mm-hmm.
but one of the first things that came to my mind was, wow, I'm not going to be able to be the father that I promised my daughters, and I'm not going to be able to be the father that I promised my wife, because she kept telling me that I didn't have my limbs. I was like, no, I have them because I feel them.
You still feel it.
Because of phantom pain, I feel them. But she told me, and I was happy to be alive, but at the same time, I was devastated because I didn't think I was going to be the man that God wanted me to be or that I wanted to be.
Yeah. What were the early stages of recovery like for you?
Wow.
It was a roller coaster, I think. Yeah. It was like a roller coaster. It was like Carlos says, at the beginning we were happy because mm-hmm. he was alive. You know,
yes.
that's what we were praying for. Okay, God, you bring him alive. But during the process, when we start seeing different things. And for example, when they told us that it's going to be like a 2 year recovery time, that was a really shocking moment because 2 years in a hospital, it was hard. And for me, I have my daughters. The older one was 4 years old and the little one was 5 months. So they were separated from us. So it was like 3 months that they were apart from us. We were in the hospital. Another thing, Carlos started having like a lot of hallucinations. He was like in and out. Sometimes he was saying the right thing, but in the other time he started seeing like blood, or he started having moments that he was in the war. Those moments were very
severe PTSD.
Yes.
It was the recovery. It was very hard, but we had a lot of support.
Mm-hmm. We
had doctors, nurses, volunteers. My family was there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our family's close, but it was closer. Mm-hmm. But during the recovery process, I just started questioning God, you know, God, why me? No, God, where are you? Because I thought that to understand that God was present in my life, I had to feel him. I have to had an experience. So I didn't understand where was God, because like I said before, you know, as Christians, we believe that if you're serving the Lord,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to go through
right.
situations like this, you know, where people telling me, oh, maybe God is punishing you. Like, I mean, it was very hard, especially those first 2 years.
Wait, did people really say that?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's... Yes, it was.
It's hard.
I mean, we started. I saw a little bit of everything, you know, during that process, because our life changed. So trying to find our new normal, trying to be a father. I mean, I used to hide my wounds from my daughters all mm-hmm. the time, because as a man, you know, I didn't want to show myself weak. I mean, when you're talking about recovery, there's so many things, but.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main things was that I didn't love my new body. I don't know how to live with this new body that I have now. So I didn't love it. I didn't like see pictures of myself. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. I didn't even want no one to take pictures of me. So going through an identity crisis as well. I was suicidal.
Narcotics.
Taking narcotics. I was addicted to narcotics. Through all this, just trying to see, you know, God, you know, what are you doing in my life?
Right. What was the most difficult part of all of that? Is there anything that stands out to you that you thought, you know what, I don't know if I could make it through this part?
For me, it was different than Carlos. I had one moment in the hospital. It was in our anniversary. I was there. I was so happy because it was the anniversary, but he started having like a lot of hallucination, changing. And that night, I think... I go to the bathroom, the hospital bathroom. I just lay in the floor and I start crying. You know, I start telling God, you know, I love him. I love him so much, but he's changing. I don't know how can I deal with this situation, or how my daughters are going to handle this situation. So I think in that moment, I just surrendered to God over there. You know, it was my moment to surrender to God. He was there in that bathroom floor that I start like receiving the comfort and the strength for God. You know, all the Bible verses that I knew from my childhood,
mm-hmm.
everything come back, and really they bring life. They were real in that moment, especially through songs. I bring the iPhone that I always put to Carlos for music. I don't know how I take the iPod and put it in the bathroom with me. And when I was crying, one of the songs started playing and saying like, only my grace is sustaining you. And it was like God, you know, talking to me, especially for me. That was my moment. So I think God was working with me first so I can help Carlos. You know, he was dealing with me first and giving me the strength so I can be there for Carlos and help him going through this situation. But for you, what's different?
I think the most difficult moment, it wasn't, yes, I was missing my legs and my left hand, and that hurt, you know, physically that hurt, not being able to do the things that I used to do before, because I was very independent and strong, and I depended so much in my body. But I think the most difficult thing for me was fear of not being accepted by the people that I love. Fear of how people look at me. Fear of showing my wounds. Fear of failing as a father. Fear of failing as a husband. And, you know, when I started feeling, you know, here I'm in my house, you know, dragging myself in the floor, looking at my daughters and seeing my wife going through so much, I kept repeating myself, I'm not going to be able to be that father and that husband. And that's when I wanted to give up, because I was like, I don't know how to live my life this way.
There's no manual for it, right?
You know, there's no manual for it. So that day I wanted to give up. I just wanted to die, and I wanted to give up on my family because I was giving up on myself. And I love my daughters. I love my wife. But at that time, I didn't love myself. So it was very hard to express love because all the fear and pain I was feeling. So when you're not happy with yourself, you push away the people that love you. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to do that. And I remember one day, that day I was ready to give up, ready to give up. And I'm dragging myself in my apartment room. And I'm ready to tell Rosemary, you know, why don't you continue with your life? And I will continue with mine here in Washington, D.C. And continue with mine was, you know, ending my life. Rosemary looked at me like she's looking at me right now. Rosemary looked at me straight in my eyes. She got on her knees and she looked at me straight in my eyes. And she told me, I told her, why don't you go home and I'll stay here? And she said, she told me, what are you saying? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you can't love me. Look at all the wounds I have in my body. And she told me, you know what? When the chaplains and the Marine came by the house to tell me what happened to you, I prayed to God and I asked God to bring you home alive. And here you are alive, right in front of me. She told me, I'm not a widow and your daughters are not orphans. You are their father. And I love you for the man you are. Mm-hmm. I love you for the man you were yesterday. I love you for the man you are today. And I love you for the man you're going to be tomorrow. And I kept telling her, you can't love me because look at all my wounds. And she told me, that's the difference between you and me. I don't see your wounds. I only see your scars. And I said, what do you mean by my scars? And she kept telling me, you know what? When a patient goes inside a hospital room with an open wound, the doctor sees him and he heals that wound. And after he heals it, he goes back. That patient goes back home. And the evidence that it has been healed, it becomes a scar. So when I see your wounds, I see your scars. And when I see your scars, I see who healed you, and that is Jesus. And if Jesus is the center of our lives, we're going to make it through. And that was a breakthrough in our lives.
That's powerful. What an example of unconditional love and pulling on the strength and the power of Almighty God. How did you prepare your little girls to see you for the first time?
Well, the older one, and we were afraid of how she's gonna react. But, you know, kids are very different than adults, and mm-hmm. they see life very, very different. So I remember when she came to the hospital for the first time, she went to the room, and she just sat down in the bed. And Carlos was with the blanket up because he don't want nobody to see him. But she was playing with the Nintendo, with the PlayStation or something. He was playing with the PlayStation, and then she looked at Papi, and she said, like, hey, Papi. You don't have legs. But that's it. That's the only thing she said.
At that time,
that's the only thing that she said. And it was like, okay. But then during the process.
So we had psychologists. Yes, we had doctors in the hospital. Mm-hmm. that were preparing her and us, you know,
how to
deal with me, you know. That papi's different, that papi is, you know, wounded. And this was a life-changing experience.
Yeah, that one.
I was in the hospital room with my wound care nurse, and my wound care nurse is healing my wounds. I mean, I'm open wounds in my limbs. My wound care nurse is healing my wounds. And I don't know, out of nowhere, Nairobi comes in the hospital room.
And she's how old?
She was
five years old,
yeah,
at that
five.
Moment. She sees me, for the first time, right?
With
my wounds. She's open wounds. When she saw me, I was like, she's going to be afraid of me for life. Mm-hmm. Traumatized. I'm a failure as a father because she's not going to accept me. I mean, who wants a father, you know, in these conditions? That's me, right? And Nairobi staring at me, and the nurse, Lauren, asked Nairobi, do you want to heal Papi's wounds? And Nairobi says, yes, I want to heal Papi's wounds. So she puts gloves in Nairobi's hands, and Nairobi touches my wounds, and she starts healing them. I start crying. Mm-hmm. And she's like, Papi, does it hurt? I'm like, no, really?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, it doesn't hurt. Papi's happy. So she showed me that I'm Papi in her life.
Yes.
Doesn't matter, you know, what I look like. What matters is my actions and that I am present in their life. I mean, she was embracing me when I wasn't even embracing myself. She was embracing my weakness when I was hiding my weakness. She was embracing my wounds when I didn't even wanted to show my wounds. So my daughters showed me all I have to do is be present,
mm-hmm,
in their lives. And they took it, I mean, they were very involved, you know, in everything, in the therapy. It was hard. It was hard for them, the changes. But we had a lot of support.
Yes.
And a lot of support. My family, friends, and the hospital. So I think it made them more resilient.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And more sensitive to the needs of others. That, you know, not everybody is the same. Everybody's different. So here we are in a hospital room with a five-year-old and a baby, you know, and there's surrounded by people that are missing limbs, hands,
mm-hmm,
and different kind of situations, and just living life to the fullest. So, and they were very exposed to a lot of good things, you know. I mean, that part was great.
And I'm sure the Lord is going to use that experience,
amen,
that they had as young girls, and the experience they're having now in their future. Who knows what he may use them to do. Now, you mentioned being surrounded by other wounded warriors. You'd also have some of them visit you, some who were maybe further along. What did that do for you?
Wow. For both of us. It showed me that, wow, you know, we can make this.
Yes.
You know, we can do this.
Yes.
Because, you know, seeing other Marines with, you know, amputations similar to mine, and seeing other, you know, other family members, you know, going through things that you were going through, it gave us hope.
It gave us hope.
And knowing that, you know, we were not the only ones, you know, facing, you know, these challenges.
Yeah.
And it was our support group,
mm-hmm,
right, at
yeah.
the same time. So, yes.
That's great. Now, there came a time when you would have to leave the hospital. And I believe that one of the first things you did was to visit your church back at home. What was that like for you?
Wow.
For both of you.
Well, after the experience where Rosemary...
When he wanted me to leave, that experience that he told me,
uh-huh,
that, hey, I want to leave. You know what? I was like, I need to go to church. You know, this is the moment to go to church. So I don't care if we have to drive 7 hours to go to church. Because
our church.
Our church. It was 7 hours from Maryland. So I told him, Carlos, we got to go to church. And he was afraid because, mm-hmm, we have to drive. And it was the first time that he's going to be inside the car for so many hours.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the best thing we do that moment. because when we get to the hospital, to the church, even outside the church, when we hear the music, oh, we start being, you know, we start crying. And no, it was...
for me, it was very hard because just getting in a vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and driving 7 hours and thinking, what are people going to say when they see me?
When they see,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I was afraid of people. I was afraid of leaving my room. So when I get to the church, I remember listening to the music at the parking lot,
mm-hmm.
the worship, you know. And here I am in my wheelchair, you know, in a public place, going inside the church for the first time. And when I get there, people are just receiving us with
yeah.
so much love.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we're worshiping and they were clapping or something. Yeah, they were clapping. And
mm-hmm.
I wanted to clap, but I forgot that I didn't have my hand to
yeah.
clap.
So we start clapping.
So Rosemary put her hand and we started clapping like that. And as we there in the church, the church, they embraced us. Everybody prayed for me. But it came to a point that I started to pray. And I took my wheelchair and I go to the altar and I'm just talking to God. And I'm like, God, I don't know how to live this way. People keep telling me you can do it, but I don't know. And I was feeling so much pain. And right there, I mean, the word just, it came life to my heart. And I understood, you know what? I looked at the cross, you know, what Jesus did for me in the cross. And I see, wow, he was wounded too, so I could be healed. Because I kept saying, God, you don't know what I'm going through, Jesus. But he was wounded so I could be healed. And I kept saying, you know, repeating the word, you know, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So it means I could be a father, I could be a husband, I could be the person that my great-grandmother told me when I was a kid. I could live that word. And I embraced that word. And I started living my life, and I realized, also, I saw that later in Scripture. But people kept telling me, you're going to have a glorified body, and you're going to do everything when you go to heaven. And I'm like, yeah, thank you. That is awesome. You know, that is our hope. But I just found it in Scripture that Jesus, in a glorified body, had an encounter with his disciples and Thomas. And the first thing that Jesus did in a glorified body was show his scars. And I said, my Savior has scars just like me. So I don't have to hide mine anymore.
Amen.
And from there on, and just the Lord just started opening doors to share our story. And that's what I realized, that, you know, standing doesn't have anything to do with having legs. Standing has to do much more with faith.
Now, Rosemary, you were very instrumental in helping Carlos to come out of his shell, to come out of his comfort zone and try new things. You were instrumental in getting him to go to church. And there were some other things you got him to do. Tell me about those.
For example, I remember in the hospital, they told us about a ski trip, a skiing. So he was so afraid. He didn't want to do nothing. He was afraid of everything. And when they told me, you know, about that ski trip, I was like, Carlos, we should go. And he was like, no, I don't want to do that because it's going to hurt and, you know, it's going to be different. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we're going to go there. We're going to go there. We're going to go that way. And we went to that ski trip. And I remember that at the beginning, it was very hard because he failed so many times. He was like, he don't even want to go the next day. He don't want to do it again. But I was like, yeah, we have to do it. We have to do it. But it was great because he has another experience when we do the ski trip.
I mean, being able to do something that I've never done in my life
yes.
before during that week in Colorado, it showed me that if I could do this, I could do anything I put my mind to. I mean, Rosemary showed me, and she shows me every day, that when you look at someone through God's love, you don't see that person as a person that's incomplete. When you see someone through God's love, even in his weakest moment, you don't see his present, you see his future. And when someone loves you, because God is love, you know, Rosemary shows me every day that love can conquer anything. And, you know, through her love, I see how God sees me. And that's how I want to see her as well. And that's how I see her. So as she's showing me that, I kind of started looking at myself through the mirror of the Word. And when I look at myself through the mirror of the Word, there's no incomplete because Jesus fulfills everything in your life. So it all takes the someone to see you how God sees you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see someone the way God sees you, you see the world differently.
I'm sitting here looking at you two. It is like God has designed you for each other.
We share the same birthday.
Do you really?
Yes.
What are some of the things that you have had an opportunity to do as a result of all that you've experienced? There are a lot of new things.
First time things. I mean, it's first time is everything because it's a new normal.
Mm-hmm.
But first time things, skiing, doing marathons, parasailing, skydiving,
yeah. Oh, goodness.
All kinds of sports and activities that showed me that if you could do this, you could do anything. But I mean, one of the most powerful experiences that we've had is that understanding that our tears yesterday is our platform mm-hmm. today. So understanding that platform, those doors that the Lord started opening, I mean, we met so many good people. We met people. We were at the White House. We were invited by the First Lady, Michelle Obama at the time, to the State of the Union address with the President at the time, Obama. We were at the Capitol. We were at the White House. We've been traveling all over the world, Europe, Asia, the Caribbean, just sharing with other people who is Jesus in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Those new things is because we see life differently now.
Mm-hmm.
This has made us more sensible to the needs of others. And we understand that it could be in a room in the Capitol. It could be a room in the White House. And it could be in a room at someone's house or in a church. Everybody has scars.
Mm-hmm.
Some are visible and some are in the heart. And people need to see someone who you can relate to. And we talk to people. We are very honest. That's why our book is Standing Together. That's why we're very honest in our book. Because we want people to see, look, everybody has scars. Everybody has wounds. But this is our healer. And our mission in life is to show the world who is our healer, who is behind our smile.
You share the hard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you touched on a little earlier, Rosemary, was the fact that you saw some effects taking place in your husband's life that had to do with the medication he was taking.
Mm-hmm.
There were some red flags. What were you seeing happening?
For him, he was changing of moods, a lot of changing of moods, hallucinations are the part, but mostly the changing of moods is something that is hard. Because, you know, seeing the person that you love going like in depression, going very, that breaks your heart. Seeing the person that you know that he has so much potential, but right now you see him like, I want to give up. That really breaks your heart. And I think that's the moment that those things, I could see it because of the medication and because of the situation that we were going through. But that's why I always, you know, I let him know that he's still the head of my family. You know, he is my husband and he's the head of the family. You are the one that need to be, you know, need to take care of all. You know, you still have a purpose. You don't lose your purpose because you lose your legs. You know, this is something that you lose, but you lose your purpose. You still have a purpose, and you're valuable for our family. So I don't want you to give up. It's right now is the time for us to keep on going. And well, we're going to do it together. I always told him, and something that I told you, and you know that, you know, Jesus has to be the center of our family. And for me, surrendering to God is like the key for my family. Praying has been my mainly weapon. I think, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Pray, just going to God, you know, I'm telling you, I can do this. Give me the wisdom to start making the right choices. That's what I need, God. And I think that's what God has been doing.
Asking for help.
Asking, yeah.
And one of those areas that you needed to ask for help for Carlos, was the addiction that began to develop with the medications.
It was hard because at the beginning, it's like he don't want to accept like he was getting into it. But really, you can see it because it was like, I want to sleep. He just get the medication and he's been sleeping all day and he don't want to do nothing else. And I start seeing those little things like, I know you have pain, and I tried to give him the chance, you know, okay, you're hurt, but there were times that I was like, you need to stop.
Denial,
that's the word. He was in denial at the beginning. He was like, he knows something was wrong, but he don't want to accept it. So I tried at the beginning to tell him, but you know what? Something that it was very helpful is a friend, because a friend came to the house, and she saw what was going on. You know, when she stayed there, she started seeing some stuff on him, and she went inside the room. She one of the best friends, Carlos' best friend. So she went inside the room and she, with love, you know, and she loved you. But
tough love.
She told him the truth. She told you, this is what is happening right now, and if you keep doing this, you're gonna lose your family. So it's time for you to wake up, you know, and stop doing those things. And I think that was a waking call for him.
But at the same time, it helped a lot, her being a nurse. She was able to see something's not right, something more. And seeing the withdrawals and all that. So her telling, I didn't want to, like I said, I was in denial because I never had been through a situation like this. But it was like about 3 years, four years.
How did you overcome addiction?
Well, I first went to my pain management doctor, and I told them, you know, I don't want to depend on these medications. So I went through a treatment. So I was in a treatment for about 2 years, and when I'm going through that treatment, then I got addicted to the treatment, and I was starting to.
Dependent,
I was trying to get out of the treatment, but I couldn't. I was having too many withdrawals and it was just very, very, very hard. And I just kind of did it little by little, but I just couldn't do it on my own. So I remember one day I'm in church, and my pastor, he's preaching at the church. And he says, someone here is going through this situation, and I feel this in my heart, and I want to pray for this. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I was in shock. I wanted to run away, you know, because this was something that nobody knew about, just us, you know, our family. And that night, I gave up and I started to pray. And I said, God, I surrender this to you because I don't want to depend on this. And I remember I was home for about 14 days, no medication, not the narcotics that I was taking. But day 15, I started having strong withdrawals. And I started looking for the pills, started looking for them, give them to me. Like a baby looking for food, you know, and I was crying and yelling, looking for it. And I couldn't go to the hospital at the time to get any because it was just, I just couldn't at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find anything. I remember Rosemary lays on bed with me, puts hot towels in my body, it's worship music and a prayer environment. And I go to sleep that way. Wake up next day, no withdrawals. Like 30 days passed by, no withdrawals, 2 months, nothing.
Yeah.
And then I got worried because I kept asking her, where are those pills? Couldn't find it because what happened if my daughters find them or something like that? I was worried. And Rosemary tells me, why are you asking me this? And I'm like, because I'm worried about someone finding them or whatever. And she's like,
I found them
like a month ago. Oh, I'm like, oh, really? So I'm like, can you get them for me? She went and got them. I took them with me, and I flushed them down the toilet. Never again. You know, that is our experience. You know, everybody goes through different experiences. Mm-hmm. But what I tell everybody is, you know, get that help. There's help out there, you know? And for that family member that's dealing with someone, you know, sometimes tough love is needed. Mm-hmm. We got to show people, you know, the effect, you know, this is what's going to happen. This is what's happened with the people that love you. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was very hard, but thank God we're here today. And thank God for the support of my family and my faith family as well.
Carlos, are you still in pain?
Yeah. I'm in pain all the time because I have phantom pain. I don't have my limbs, so I have a lot of nerve pain. This is something that I deal with every day. Sometimes it's less than before, but I've learned to deal with it, to live with it.
Mm-hmm. One of the difficulties that you and other amputees face is living more of an independent life. And sometimes you can live more independently, but there has to be some accommodations in place. What has God done to help you in that area?
Well, when I was in the hospital, we got so much support, you know, from so many people. I mean, I love this country because when I first had my injury, I didn't think there was so many people out there. And I just started meeting so many good people that care, that love, the sacrificing what we were doing, you know, for our country. So I remember one day, I mean, I was in Puerto Rico at that time, and Dave, who has a nonprofit organization, Operation Coming Home, they call me and tell me, hey, are you Sergeant Evans? And I'm like, yes, this is Sergeant Evans. And he's like, well, we want to build you and your wife, your family, a accessible home for you and your family.
Oh my goodness.
And I thought it was a joke. Yeah, or something. And calls me again and he's like, yeah, we want to meet you. We heard about your story. And but I couldn't believe it because I was like, you know, why will someone do something for me? I mean, what's supposed to catch? And I remember them telling me, the reason you want to do this is because we want to honor your life, you know, for what you've done for this country. But we understand that God has purpose in your life, and this is our way of being part of that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, the Lord blessed us with an accessible home where I could be independent, where I could do, you know, things on my own. I remember one of the first days we're home. I mean, I could go inside and outside the house by myself. Mm-hmm. That's the first time I didn't have to ask anyone, you know, open the door or help me.
That had to be a great feeling.
Yeah. Things that we take for granted sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember I went outside with my dog.
He didn't tell me nothing. And I was looking for him all over in the house. Like, Carlos, where are you? And he was with the dog.
Yeah. And he came back. He said, where were you? I'm like, I just went out. The dog, you know, it was things that we take out for granted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, things like that. We met so many nonprofit organizations out there that are doing great nice. For our veterans. Mm-hmm. And through these nonprofit organizations, you know, helped us to be more independent. And my daughter is able to see me, you know, strong and independent, you know, mm-hmm. Show them, you know, look at Papi, you know, doing things on his own. It's encouraging me, and mm-hmm. we're so grateful. After that experience, it was like, we want to do this. We're going to be able to do this for other people as well. So after we build our home, I work with them, and we build, I think, 14 more homes after that.
Oh, my.
And they're still building homes for wounded vets, Gold Star families, and being a veteran advocate and speaking, representing wounded vets. And that's something that's deep in our hearts, bringing awareness to where we go. Mm.
Now, are you able to drive?
Yes.
Yes.
Tell me how that works.
Well, at Walter Reed, We had this awesome therapist friend, Tammy Phipps. I remember that I didn't think I was going to be able to drive, mm-hmm. but Tammy, the therapist, she told me, yes, you know, this is possible. So through our therapy, she teach me how to drive. And the vehicle has hand controls.
Okay.
So through hand controls, I ran a drive with Tammy Phipps. And it was like 6 months after that. There's an organization, Helping a Hero, Helping Our Military Heroes,
yeah.
Helping Our Military Heroes from Connecticut that we met in the hospital. They wanted to meet us. And I didn't even know why. So we're talking, sharing our story. Everybody's crying. And right there, they told us, you know, we have this organization and we're like to honor your lives with a accessible adaptive band. And and we were the first recipients of that band, and today they've done more than 100 mm-hmm. Vans for wounded vets and their families.
Really?
So being able to, Rosemary doesn't have to lift the wheelchair anymore. Yeah. She put it in the car. Now,
we have a
van that has a ramp, go inside the wheelchair, and it has hand controls, and that's the way I drive.
I love that. I love that. And then your girls, you get to drive your girls around if you need
to,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In your book, you said that you were being interviewed on a television program, and the reporter asked you if you could go back to the Carlos who was at Walter Reed in that hospital bed, what would you tell him? What was your answer?
My answer was, I was shocked by the question. But my answer made me go back to 8 years at that time. And I my answer was, if I could go back and see that Sergeant Carlos Evans in that hospital bed, I will tell him these words. Be patient, very, very patient. Because from now on, you are going to live the best days of your life. Mm. And my family is a witness, my wife is a witness. What happened to me in May 17, 2010, I thought it was going to be the worst thing of my life. But in Christ, it has become the best thing that has happened in our lives. Because we have grown I'm seeing God in a way that I didn't see him before, mm-hmm. that I didn't know him before. And today, with one hand, I'm touching more people than when I had two. Today, without legs, leaving more footprints than when I had legs. I look at this experience, you know, everybody goes through situations in life, you know, afflictions, troubles, loss. But we've seen through all this that in Christ, we are conquerors, we're not victims. So I look at the explosion not as an obstacle today, but as a step stone to a better father, better husband, to a better Carlos Evans. I'm not saying that everybody has to go through a situation like that. But in my life, I thank God that he trusted me with this experience. So his name could be glorified. I remember the day I was in the State of the Union address and everybody is applauding everybody's applauding to me. And I'm like, what am I doing here? And right there, I mean, the Spirit of God, you know, in my heart. You are here so the world can see who is your healer.
Yes.
And that's what it's all about.
I wish you could have seen Carlos and Rosemary Evans as I interviewed them. I could see the joy of the Lord on their faces and the deep love they have for each other. In Proverbs 16:9, it says, "The mind of a man plans his ways, but the Lord directs his steps." Carlos knew that God had a plan for him to share the gospel with others. But when things didn't happen the way he thought they would, he began to doubt it would happen at all. Have you ever felt that way? I know I have. It's easy for us to believe that if we do what we're supposed to do, then everything should work out just fine. But this is not always the way God chooses to do things. He tells us in Isaiah 55:8 that his thoughts are not our thoughts and neither are his ways our ways. God has a plan for each one of us, yes. Some of us see those plans fall into place like pieces of a puzzle. But others of us have our lives interrupted by some extremely difficult circumstances. It is in those dark times that God shapes us and prepares us for the work he has called us to do. I think of Joseph in slavery and then in prison, Moses on the backside of the desert, David on the run from King Saul. My prayer for you, as you've listened to Carlos and Rosemary's story, is that it sparks in you a new hope, that no matter how your circumstances currently appear, God is able to do, as he says in Ephesians 3:20, immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us. Thanks for listening. If you want to find out more about Carlos and Rosemary Evans, check out the show notes on the Unfavorable Odds page at familylife.com/podcasts. If you enjoyed today's conversation, I hope you'll consider subscribing to the podcast. You can search for Unfavorable Odds on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you go for podcasts. Oh, and by the way, we'd love to get your feedback, and positive reviews are appreciated. And if I can ask you a big favor, will you help us spread the word about this podcast? Maybe think about one or two people you think might enjoy or benefit from listening. Next time on Unfavorable Odds.
Being there after he left with her bleeding and curled up in a corner, crying and pleading with me. You never treat a woman like that. You know, those moments still live in my heart.
Dr. S. Todd Townsend, next time. I'm Kim Anthony. Thanks for listening to this episode of Unfavorable Odds. Unfavorable Odds is produced by Family Life and is a part of the Family Life Podcast Network.